Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedy is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. If you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are much important, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Although these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. But if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do where I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make, if your remedy is in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right, that is my ramble for this evening, folks.
Thank you very much, Martin. You are greatly appreciated. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Tuesday night call. We have a first-time caller from Beverly Hills, California, ending their phone number ending in 8945. Would you be so kind as to offer your first name only, please?
Hi, Beverly my name Hills, is Shakti. Yes, it's not my first call, though. Shakti.
Okay, what, how do you spell your
name? S-H-A-K-T-I, Shakti.
Got it. Thank you, Ms. Shakti. It's a pleasure. How'd you hear about us?
Thank you. Through the website.
Very good.
I've been on several calls. Yes.
Okay, I just didn't have you this phone number logged in, but we do now, so
okay.
That's good.
No worries.
Thank you so much. Nah, that's
you're
good.
Welcome. Thank
All
you.
All right, so thank you. Let me mute your line for a moment. Just as a reminder to everybody to press *2 on your keypad to raise your hand if you have any questions. Let me start off by saying and sharing with you how a United States citizen is actually a corporation. Congressional Record, this is June 13, 1967, at pages 15,641 through 646, it says, and I quote, "A citizen of the United States is civilly dead entity operating as a co-trustee and co-beneficiary of the private constructive trust, a.k.a. the SESTK Trust, of the United States Incorporated under the 14th Amendment, which upholds the debt of the United States of America and United States, Inc., Incorporated, in Section 4. There you go. It continues. This is another court case, People versus De La Guerra, 40 California, 311-342. Quote, "It is evident that the U.S. citizens have not the particular political rights which are vested in citizens of the states. They are not constituents of any community in which is vested any sovereign power of the government. Their position partakes more of the character of subjects than citizens. They are subject to the laws of the United States, but they have no voice in its management. If they are allowed to make laws, the validity of these laws is derived from the sanction of a government in which they are not represented. Mere citizenship they may have, but political rights of citizens they cannot enjoy." That's a court case, People versus De La Guerra. The United States Code that uses American National while maintaining no such status as a 14th Amendment citizen. It's naturalized citizen of the United States. I've been looking for the expression American national. It's always bothered me because I couldn't find it. But at 8 U.S.C. in section 1502, it talks about this, quote, certificate of nationality issued by Secretary of State for person not a naturalized citizen of the United States for use in proceedings of a foreign state. The Secretary of State is authorized to issue at his discretion and in accordance with rules and regulations prescribed by him a certificate of nationality for any person not a naturalized citizen of the United States who presents satisfactory evidence, and this is directly quoting, satisfactory evidence that he is an American national and that such certificate is needed for use in judicial or administrative proceedings in a foreign state. So what is that document? What is that satisfactory evidence? It's your birth certificate. That's what it is. Such certificate shall be solely for the use in case for which it was issued and shall be transmitted by the Secretary of State through appropriate official channels to the judicial or administrative officers of the foreign state in which it is to be used. So there you go. Right there, the term American national is present in 8 U.S.C. section 1502, and that's good for me. I've been saying, if you know, Union State citizen, which is also perfectly fine, but there it is. At 19 Corpus Juris Secundum, at section 883, it says that the United States government is a foreign corporation with respect to a state. At 8 U.S.C. sections 101A21, the term national, it says, means a person owing permanent allegiance to a state. And then at section 22, it says the term national of the United States means either a citizen of the United States or B, a person who, though not a citizen of the United States, owes permanent allegiance to the United States. So what about this? There are two distinct statuses within the American system. The former is a freeman. The latter is a voluntary slave subject to the jurisdiction thereof created by Section 1 of the 14th Amendment. It is a federally created capacity. It's a title, and that it owes its allegiance to that. There are two classes of citizens. Citizens of the United States and of a state. And one may be a citizen of the former without being a citizen of the latter. This is again quoting Gardena versus Board of Registers. In Murphy versus Ramsey, federal citizenship is a municipal franchise domiciled in the District of Columbia, and the political rights of federal citizens are franchises which they hold as privileges at the legislative discretion of Congress. In U.S. versus Valentine, quote, the only absolute and unqualified right of a United States citizen is to residence within the territorial boundaries of the United States. In Wheeling Steel Corporation versus Fox, therefore, the U.S. citizen, open bracket, citizens of the District of Columbia, close bracket, residing in one of the states of the Union are classified as property and franchises of the federal government as an individual entity. In Hendricks versus Maryland, a U.S. citizen upon leaving the District of Columbia becomes involved in interstate commerce as a resident and does not have the common law right of a citizen of one of the several states. In Cruikshank, U.S. versus Cruikshank, quote, there is in our political system, a government for each of the several states and a government of the United States. Each is distinct from the other and has citizens of its own. In Maxwell versus Dowd, the privileges and immunity of citizens of the United States do not necessarily include all the rights protected by the first 8 amendments to the federal Constitution against the powers of the federal government. Therefore, a U.S. citizen, we can conclude simply, is a piece of property. And if you read any of the old court cases prior to the Civil War, where slavery was the issue, the debate was always over property rights. Therefore, a U.S. citizen is actually a slave. The 14th Amendment defines what a U.S. citizen is. Section 1, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States. But you have to understand, the United States defined is 10 miles within the seat of power. All territories, possessions, and enclaves, that's it. The several states are foreign to the United States. The so-called 14th Amendment, it criminally converts, through our own ignorance, U.S. citizenship completely upside down to what the Founding Fathers had intended. That's what it does. So, with that having been said, let's open the call up for questions, and we'll go from there. Press star 2 on your keypad, please. Let's have some talk. Press star 2 on your keypad. Let me check Freedom's Radio to see if anybody has raised their hands there yet to start or posted a question. Just take a moment. Bum, bum. Nothing there yet. Anyone have a question? I see Armenta, I see Kim and Pat and Brent and Dwan and Jane, Scott, Ron, Shakti, Trip, Pam, Emily, Tommy, all sorts of people here tonight. Anybody got a question or a comment? If not, we're going to have an incredibly slow night tonight. Well, there we go. John in Norfolk, followed by Armenta. Go right ahead.
Hello, hello. Thank you. Question for you. I was listening to a gentleman talk yesterday, of course, again, about changing one's status. And I was curious. The question popped in my head. Convicted felons, can they change their status?
Of course. And you're not changing. I correct every time I hear this, I throw a red flag up. You're not changing your status. You're correcting your status. And in doing so, the effect of correcting your status is a change. Sounds like it's the same thing, only different? No. Because when you change your status, you're saying that what it was before was right, but for whatever reason or circumstances have arisen, you now need to change it to be correct. That's changing your status.
Okay.
Correcting your status is a thing that goes back, and the legal term is nunc pro tunc, to the point of the beginning. All the records have to be corrected to what they were in the beginning, and then they move forward. It could be your conviction, or a conviction for whomever you're speaking of, would be made void simply by the fact that at the time of your conviction, the record incorrectly reflected your political status as a 14th Amendment citizen. Copy?
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Anything else?
No, I'm satisfied. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Armenta, how are you?
I am doing well. How are you, Michael?
Fantastic. You've been
good.
Been good.
Good. I just wanted to come on and say, actually, over the past couple of days, let's see, today's Tuesday, maybe starting on this weekend, I was notified via email by one of the exchanges. Now, I invest in cryptocurrency, and I have crypto on multiple exchanges, but now that Biden has put this executive order in place, a lot of that deals with regulations and things. And so I was being kind of put through the ringer about where I get my funds from. And they actually froze this account. Where I get my funds and what's my job title. And what company do I work for? And so there were like four upfront questions that I answered them. And then they came back and said, okay, we need documentation of pay stubs. We need this. We need that. And I'm like, this is no more than the U.S. federal government, who is trying to regulate the exchanges the way they regulate the banks. And so with that being said, I know that we're going to be getting our status correction paperwork. Well, we'll get our DS-11. Do you have any suggestions about how to handle that? Because I guess once I have concrete evidence that my status is corrected, you know, I can probably submit something to them or to whoever wants to know.
Well, actually, the affidavit that I had emailed it to you, then you printed it out and mm-hmm. had it applied your signature under notary and then mailed it,
yes.
you know, posted it to me.
Mm-hmm.
That is the correction of your status.
Okay.
Then when that was forwarded by me to the State Department of the United States, when you now go and so then there's proof of that posting, I've got the receipt, then when you go to your 15-minute meeting and then eventually, you know, a month later, 2 months later, 6 weeks, however long it is, that you get in your post a United States passport and
mm-hmm.
a United States passport card, that is merely the evidence of
yes.
the correction. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
you can use that affidavit. We have people that are involved in traffic cases
mm-hmm.
and they do not have their passports yet or their pass card, but they created a new affidavit,
okay.
and they introduced that into the court record. And mysteriously, on the two cases, they are not being given a date for a trial.
Okay.
So, the correction of status is what you evidence each and every time you present your affidavit. Live affidavit to whatever party. Okay?
Okay. Yes.
So who was giving you the third degree on all these questions?
Which exchange?
You had mentioned a list of requests for information that somebody was asking you.
Yeah, that was one of the crypto exchanges.
Okay. So if I was doing a crypto exchange, I would be filing them I would be sending them the original affidavit, a brand new one, and saying
mm-hmm.
under what pretense are you asking your question?
Okay.
That's what I would do.
Okay.
All right.
That sounds fair.
Any other thing?
No, that's it. You know, I was just thinking about the whole thing. I answered their questions. They did unfreeze the account, but, you know, as of today, I was still trying to get answers. You know, are you finished? Because if you're not finished, then I need to take action. Because I'm not giving you any more information.
Right. I would be sending them. You see, there's, first off, I would not allow for anything to be verbally asked of me. Put your question in writing, and then
they are in writing. They're sending emails and things back and forth.
Okay. Well, the thing is that if those emails are something, say, from a legal department, then they're using legal terms. For instance, if
mm-hmm.
you see the word resident. In the thing, you know, is your residence 123 Main Street, any town, USA?
Mm-hmm.
Then, and you say, yes, that's my residence. You've just acknowledged that you are a 14th Amendment citizen. And
mm-hmm. doesn't have any of those legal jargon questions.
Okay. All right. I would send them a copy of your affidavit and ask them to put that with whatever record they keep on you.
Okay. That sounds good.
That's what I would do where I'm similarly situated. Thank you so much. It's good hearing from you, Armenta. Next is, I see Scott, you're on the call. I saw where you called earlier today. I will return your call. It'll be probably tomorrow, but just want to let you know that I did see you and didn't want to let you know that I was ignoring you in any way. Anyone else, press star 2 on your keypad, please. Let me go check Freedom's Radio while you're thinking of doing that again. Dun, dun, dun. Wow, we've got more people on Freedom's Radio than we do on the call. That's incredible. It doesn't happen too often. Most people just dial in. Press star 2 on your keypad. Those of you on Freedom's Radio, you'll notice on the center right of your monitor, there is a silhouette of a rectangle. Inside of it, left click, type away your comment or your question. On the outside of that rectangle, you'll see a place for your contact information. Just hit submit, and we'll go from there. But if we don't have anyone raising their hands talking to me, we're going to have a short call tonight, and that's not good. Half the call so far has just been the disclaimer. Press star 2. Otherwise, we're going to say goodnight. It's going to be a short call, going once. Hey, there we go. Brent, good seeing you again. How are you doing?
Good. Just to extend the call a little bit longer here for you.
thanks.
All that information that you were reading at the beginning, I think you put that in a PDF and you sent that. We had that, correct?
No, actually, that's something else from, let's see, I've got such a collection of work. This is a little essay talking about a U.S. citizen as a corporation. That's the title of it. And
okay.
And that's what I read to you. But much of what you have within this, I'm going to be pulling from this the 8 U.S.C. Section 1502, that actually identifies the term by the phrase American national. I love it. So I'm going to be putting that within. I send out, ladies and gentlemen, a collection of maybe a dozen different authors. I've taken all of their work, copied and pasted, and put it into a single document that I titled, Once We Were Colonists, Subject to a King, An Essay in Jurisdiction. And that portion of it, and that's what the gentleman is in reference to right now, and I'm going to be copying and pasting this portion into that after the call tonight, because it is incredible. It's the play, it needs to be told. Hey, Johnny Ringo, Shawana, Wisconsin. I'm going to unmute you. You haven't even raised your hand. Brent, this is Johnny Ringo. Johnny is an investigator. He was the lead investigator for Mr. Tony Davis, the late Tony Davis. Johnny, how you doing?
Pretty good. Can't complain. Nobody listens to me anyways.
Nobody misses you?
Listen to me.
So, Brent, did you have any questions that you wanted to bring up about that article?
I was going to go back over the recording and transcribe it, and I was just curious if you have that available that you can get out to us in an email format.
I'll be happy to send it to you.
Fantastic.
All right. Do me a favor. You've got you can text me. Just text me the request, and that way I can grab the email and everything from you at that time.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So, Johnny, what's up?
No, and I got a question for your one of your top tax informants.
Okay. Nobody's here but us roosters and chickens. What's your question?
Say you offer a service to the public and you require payment in silver and gold. Will the IRS try to tax you on that, seeing that
well,
the U.S.
the IRS,
does not pay, acquire payments
is I cut you off. I didn't mean to, Johnny. Go ahead.
That's okay. Go right ahead. Seeing that the U.S. doesn't acknowledge payment in silver or gold.
Right. That's the United States at Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. They're a little democracy that they've got over there. Correct.
Yeah. So I was just wondering if they would be interested in taxing an individual that works only in that legal tender or unlegal tender, however you want to put it, in silver or gold.
Well, if you recall, everything is based on jurisdiction and everything is based on contract. And the
right.
jurisdiction of the Internal Revenue Service is internal to Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution. Otherwise, it would be called the National Revenue Service. But the National Revenue Service does not exist. A constitutional tax exists, and that is called apportionment. So, and then that has to be paid in gold or silver, like kind of, you know, substantive money. I don't ever recall historically ever seeing a portion tax applied ever since the creation of our country. Anyways.
Yeah.
The point is that
if the
Internal Revenue Service ever reaches out to you, the team that is assembled here is going to make them prove up land jurisdiction, territorium jurisdiction, as well as personam jurisdiction. And it just cannot be done. Bernie had a situation almost 20 years ago now. When I first started with him, it was 10 years ago. Anyways, Bernie had a situation where the IRS pulled out six figures from two different accounts that he had. And within three months and just two letters written, or maybe it was 2 months and three letters written, I get confused, all the money was put back. Simply because the form of his letters was basically the same thing that would have been put forth within a litigation, within trial. What you'd be examining an expert witness on from the IRS to giving testimony. And they just folded their hand and gave all the money back. And it works that way when done properly. Okay?
Okay, great. That answers my question. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you, Johnny, for showing up. We really appreciate you. We appreciate your input. Brent, you raised your hand again. Go ahead, buddy.
Well, you brought up the IRS subject, and you know that's the hot button for me. So would
sure.
it be a good thing to do to send the affidavit to the IRS for my file?
Well, what I'd like for you to do is to have you ever presented to the team a short fact sheet of your situation?
No.
Okay. I would encourage you to basically create a bulleted fact sheet of what went on. In other words, from the point of the beginning
nothing
of you till what do you mean nothing went on? At some place they put their hands on you, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean basically I was under the radar for many years. I only worked for cash, and then starting,
sure.
you know, I had a family and stuff, and starting about 1995, I got a bank account, and you know, I had a social security number when I was a kid, but I never used it. There were a couple, like, hit and miss, you know, $1,000 here in a year, or, you know, $500, $2,000 there in a year over all those years, but starting in around 1995, 96, 97, somewhere in there, I started working under payroll. and paying taxes.
Right, right. Well, there's a whole ruling on. I'll have to bring it up. I'll bring it up next week with regards to your Social Security number and how you actually can claim that you don't have one because it's not your property and be within the law perfectly. And we'll cover that next week. That'll be something good to do. But I would encourage you to just put down a list from the point of the beginning to 1995. I had no headaches. Then just what you said. And put out the dates. And then when did the IRS first contact you? And what happened at what other date? And so forth. Let me get that in front of the team, and then we'll have a quick conference call. There's no charge, and they can just, you know, share with you their thoughts on that and what they would do similarly.
Yeah, I've never been contacted by the IRS. I just file my taxes, and I collect my refund, you know.
Okay.
The only time the IRS sent me a letter, it was for the trust and says not required to file a tax return for the trust.
Right. Okay. There's I have, incidentally, an accountant that is an information provider that we don't talk about only because we're primarily dealing with people who are having to defend themselves against the IRS or other government agencies. And what this accountant does is he knows how to take the material of what you have and present that less expenses and things, and he has expenses that you wouldn't believe are actually there that you never take, and he can basically bring your tax exposure to its minimal amount if you want to stay within the system.
No, I don't. I did not file a 2021 tax return because I've corrected my status and I can't sign that line. I don't
right,
want to file
exactly.
taxes, and the IRS is going to be sending me letters here pretty soon.
Well, if I were to get a letter from the IRS, the first thing that I would do is I would send them a copy of that affidavit of correcting your status. Is that would be my first step.
So I just wait for the letter, or do you think I should anticipate?
I think that you should be introduced to the team and just, you know, have a conversation with them one afternoon for 30 minutes or so.
Okay. And just send you an email regarding that?
Yeah. Yeah. Send me an email or a text requesting that information that you did, the copy of what I was reading from. I'll get that to you, and then send me another email, and we'll get you a conference with the team.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else, press star 2 on your keypad. Otherwise, we're going to say goodnight. I'm going to check Freedom's Radio real quick, see if anybody there has posted a question. And they haven't, so let's see. That was Brent. Anyone else have a question? Press star 2 on your keypad. Otherwise, we're going to say goodnight. Going once. Johnny, thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's good talking to you. And we'll meet with everybody soon again.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Just one little note. The side is that we've won 31 cases when they threw Title 18 out. And,
wait a minute. Bring us up to date. Ladies and gentlemen, just a little background here. Johnny Ringo, that, of course, is a nom de guerre, nom de plume, whatever, was the senior investigator for the late Tony Davis that I did the marketing for almost a full decade. And the point of the spear that Tony was focused on was the invalidity of Title 18 of the United States Code. How it came to be, and that it fails, according to the rules, to even exist. So, Johnny, tell us what your latest is that you've accomplished with that.
Well, I've been contacted by several attorneys or lawyer firms, law firms, and I presented most of the information that I had to them, and four of them are involved in Title 18 cases, and about a year and a half ago, the Justice Department declared Title 18 not to be anyone, not to be prosecuted under Title 18. They did not give any reasons for it. But since then, we've had 31 cases come up before the federal judges, and we presented the paperwork issued by the Justice Department declaring that Title 18 should not be used as a prosecution or a statute to be prosecuted under. And so far we've got 31 cases that have been either thrown out or dismissed, and we're fairly successful with it.
I've talked to John, that's the team leader in the group, about the Title 18. He's very, very interested. He's been swamped with different fires for different people that he's not been able to tear away. But I want to have him talk with you. I want to set up a conference call between the two of you, because that's a tool that needs to be exploited for many people.
Yeah, it's so far we've been very successful with it. And it's not what the goal that we wanted to achieve to totally eliminate it, but we've been able to kind of curtail the use of it very efficiently. And we're pretty happy about it. And the four law firms that I've been dealing with are very, very satisfied with it. And like I say,
I'm surprised that law firms are actually employing that, considering it's a tool that makes them money.
Well, they were making, I charged substantially for my services, for the information services and everything, and I haven't had one turn away from me yet, because they've got clients that are very successful or satisfied with the information furnished to them. So
sure,
things are going good on it. It's not exactly what I wanted, but we're chewing away at it little by little.
Right. It's good to know. Anyone else have a question? Press star 2 on your keypad, otherwise it's nighty night time.
Okay. You take care.
Johnny, come back soon, please.
Will do. Take care.
Thank you. Everybody else, thank you for joining us this evening. Until next week, good night and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.